Well, how about an hour of phone calls with Robert Young Pelton? Your questions next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. Robert Young Pelton with us. We'll get to your calls as well as we talk about his work, his incredible work that he does all around the planet. If you want to look at a crystal ball, Robert, what do you think the next 3 to 5 years could be for all of us?
Well, we have an election coming up, so whatever policies were in place under the Obama administration are going to be reviewed, and politicians are driven by polls, particularly Hillary Clinton, so she's going to be looking to do something dramatic or at least build her legacy. This is the last time she's going to be in public office, I think. Donald Trump is looking for the missing piece. You know, he's not an insider. He probably is going to have a very hard time pushing through any type of legislation. I used to work with Mike Flynn, General Mike Flynn. He's a very, very sharp cat. He doesn't come off well on public interviews because he's a no-nonsense guy.
Yeah.
Governor Christie's an insider, but that's exactly the kind of insider I don't really want in the White House. I think they're going to have problems, and so I think what's going to happen is that they're going to look for quick fixes or sensationalist things. Now, you're asking me what's going to happen in the world. I think we're going to make things happen in the world. I think we're going to see an escalation of the conflict in places like Syria, in Iraq, in Libya, in Yemen, and we're going to start committing U.S. troops, because as soon as you have a war president, as we saw with George Bush, we no longer focus on domestic issues. You know, we rally behind the president because there's a greater evil. Secondly, I see a challenge for our civil liberties. I think that these individual wackos that live in their mom's basement or that can't join even a hate group are going to constantly try to terrorize America to get attention, and we're going to call them terrorists, and we're going to then start cracking down on people's civil liberties. So those two things are going to drive our view of conflict. Now, are there more wars happening, and will there be a big war? You saw what Russia did in the Ukraine. They have the ability to shut off all the natural gas and let Europe sit in the dark, but then again, they need the money for that natural gas. So they learned a lesson very quickly. You see China acting tough in the South China Sea. They just recently lost a court case in which there was no merit to the claim in that region, but they are trying to expand their control of everything from Southeast Asia to Africa. So at some point, we're going to bump into them. Will they fight? No. I think what they'll do is they'll resort to very passive, aggressive type things.
You know, they built it. They built. Go ahead, Robert. I'm sorry.
The biggest problem we have is not being able to get a handle on our own population. And I would say this, as an American, I would worry about America first. I mean, this is where we live, this is where our kids go to school, and this is where we have to make things work. And I saw a surprising lack of leadership over the last few weeks in which we were challenged with a number of very brutal, shocking things, and we didn't see people step forward and get down with the people to understand what was happening. We saw them filtered, and that always leads to mistakes. So I would like to see the next president actually get down on the streets and engage with people.
I don't know if that'll happen.
I don't think it will. So that's what I'm saying. You're asking me about my concerns. We have such a separated society of the haves and the have-nots. And if you remember, a couple of years back, I predicted that a charismatic, you asked me, you said, Robert, what's going to happen? And I said, well, I think a charismatic is going to come up, and people are going to rally around him, but he'll be a false prophet. And I think this is what's happening with Donald Trump. We want an outsider to ride in on a white horse and kick out all the corrupt, you know, politicians. But I don't think it's going to happen. So a lot of people are going to be let down.
It's not going to be easy, is it?
Well, we do have a democratic country, and we did in some way shape these candidates, or the lack of these candidates, and I would really strongly urge people to look at the full list of people who are running for president, not just the two-party hacks, and let's change the way we do things, because it's become so, I don't know, I don't want to say corrupt, but I think it is corrupt, and I think it's so destructive to our vision of America. You know, we are the innovators. We are the people that do the right thing. We are the people that fix things. We learn from lessons. And I think with the two candidates we have, we've got crooked and crazy to choose from. So, you know, dig deeper into the candidate list and vote with your heart.
You think the libertarian Gary Johnson has a chance? Well, there's that answer.
I think he's more sane. I think he's more pragmatic, but can he pull it off? I don't know. Libertarians, nothing wrong with libertarians running a country, but, you know, it's all talk until the you-know-what hits the fan, right?
What they are hoping for is that there's not enough electoral votes and that the House of Representatives have to pick someone.
Yeah, but I think we screwed ourselves. I mean, honestly, I think we've made the political system so caustic. Anytime somebody runs for office, we start digging into their past. We start asking questions about their sex life. We go out of our way to trash these people, and we end up with two battered candidates. So anybody with some substance is going to say, "Do I really want to put myself through that?"
Well, you know, that's a great remark, because as I looked at these two candidates, saying, "Is that all this country can field?" Nobody wants to really run and get in there. Now, yeah, the Republicans had a handful of people, a dozen of them running, but they got nipped off pretty quickly, didn't they?
Yeah, but let's stop charging $1 billion to run for president and watch what happens. You know, let normal people have a chance at running for president, mm-hmm. and watch how vital and vibrant the field becomes. Right now, you've got to play... You got to dance to a lot of tunes to get $1 billion to run for president.
Yeah, that is true. Let's go to the phones. First-time caller Norm in St. Louis. Hey, Norm, go ahead.
Yes, sir. I was just wanting to kind of toss in my end times views with this, that basically with all the chaos and wars and whatnot, you know, it's nothing new, but it's escalating with the BLM and the police shootings and whatnot and all that, but... my view is this, that as we get into those times, you're basically either a decent, loving, civil human being who cares about people, and, you know, you follow the Lord the best you can, and like myself, I donate to my church, my 10% tithes, I donate to Israel regularly, because I believe in my Bible, and I believe that he who blesses the Lord will be blessed. He who blesses Israel will be blessed by the Lord. He who curses him will be cursed. So I try to do the best I can. And basically, it comes down to not black against white. It's all good against evil. And you're either a good person or an evil person. And there's only so much we can do here. And as long as you're ready to meet your Lord at every second of your life, then you're doing good. And you kind of got to let the chips fall with the where they may with the people that aren't living that way, because there's only so much you can do to combat it all.
Well, interesting take on all of that, Norm. There is that battle of good against evil, Robert, isn't there?
Yeah, ISIS has actually positioned themselves as an apocalyptic cult.
Yes.
They want the final battle to occur in a place in Syria, and they are using this to add legitimacy to what they're doing. Now, is it the end of the world? Probably not. But is it good against evil? Yes. And what we have to always remember, that when good fights against evil, it ends up becoming evil. And this is one of the problems we're having with drone strikes and the proxy wars and secret wars is, you know, to fight a really, really evil enemy like ISIS, you have to do really evil things. And I think that gnaws at people's conscience. You know, are we doing the right thing by fighting these wars in these horrible places?
Next up, let's go to Jerry in Atlanta. Hey, Jerry, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to know two things. Like, the first one, do you think ISIS is going to end up doing something big over here? And then the second one is, do you think that we could, if these riots get out of control in America, could it just spew a civil war in this country? You know, that the military would have to get out here and you know, get it under control? Because, you know, if they got the cops where they can't do their job, I mean, who else is going to protect us other than the military? But I see so much hatred all over Atlanta and Georgia. Everybody's looking at each other like, are you a Democrat? Are you a Republican? Do you like the cops? Do you hate the cops? It's just people, it's just like, it's you know, scary to even get out on the streets around here anymore, especially at night, you know? So I wanted to ask those two questions.
He's hit the nail on the head, because we are involved in an asymmetrical war. And asymmetrical warfare requires you project fear into the enemy. Now, you're not physically inside the enemy, but you're projecting that fear, and that fear causes division. So, you know, when Genghis Khan used to go to a village and make a mountain of skulls, he didn't do that to every village. He just did it to one or two, and the rest fell in line. When ISIS cuts off an American journalist's head or has a bomb attack or an attack in Paris, they're projecting fear into those communities. Now, that tends to polarize people, and then that tends to attract the loonies to their cause. So the shooter in Dallas, for example, was not a political animal. He was not a person that was fighting for a cause, but he was deeply affected by the ability to use the BLM protest, Black Lives Matter, and to use that as a platform for murder and violence. And this is the problem, is that we're not at war against this one guy, but by polarizing society, we create a conduit for individual crazies and small groups of people.
Yeah, we sure do. We sure do. Saudi Arabia got hit by some bombings in their holy area. I never thought that would happen.
Well, it's happened in the past. You remember a group took over the holy shrine in Mecca for a while.
Right.
It's a long time. Saudi Arabia, you don't get a lot of in-depth reporting out of there, and you don't really see what's happening. But Saudi Arabia is falling apart with the oil prices going down and the royal family being about two gunshots away from anarchy. You're starting to see behind the curtain now. Keep in mind that some of these groups like the UAE, there's no real defense force except for mercenaries. You know,
yeah.
People like Eric Prince go over there and ply their trades because there is no indigenous force that's going to rise up and defend the royal family. So these people are living on paper-thin permissions. We see this in Africa as well. In South Sudan fell apart last week. We think that these people are leaders of countries and that they're working it out with a peace agreement. And then we realize that it's an ethnically divided group that's still paying back violence for previous violence that was done a year ago.
We've got Patrick in Oxnard, California. Hi, Patrick. Thanks for calling.
Hello.
Good to have you with us.
I heard there on Anderson Cooper 360 or something, there's 55 steel storage containers of gold bullion missing.
Missing from where?
In the Iraq war.
Oh, I'm sure that's probably true.
There's a lot of money missing. If you saw the pictures of the planes full of American $100 bills, freshly printed, being dropped off, there was a slice of that. I think it's like $6 or $5 billion sitting in Lebanon in a bunker somewhere. And who knows how much of that just poured into people's pockets over there. But, yeah, it's just money. You know, we'll make more.
Tom is in Riverside, California now. Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, George.
Hi there,
Robert.
Tom.
I wanted to say that I think, you know, our government's been hijacked a long time back now, and for, you know, the same old reasons that we've been talking about for 50 years. And I think one big mistake that was, well, it wasn't a mistake because we're really not running our country. But when the draft was gotten rid of, that was, it would be a good idea back then. But since then, it was just a way of getting the American people that has to be involved in that because we're the American people. It's the government. We are the government. We have to be, we really need to bring the draft back because we need input into a war we're in. And we don't pay attention to the veterans. We don't care about the veterans. I don't care about the veterans, and I hate to say that, but most of the people out here don't have a clue. They don't care. They just don't because they're not involved. It's not their next door neighbor. It's not their cousin, and that's what needs to be brought back to this country. Also, the police shootings, they do way too many shootings. Every day I hear about it, I hear about a new one today. It's the same thing. They shoot people when they don't have to shoot people. Tonight it was a guy that got shot last month, but they shot him four times, and they told him, get your hands out where we can see them. Get your hands. We're going to shoot you again. We'll shoot you again if you have to. Now, why would they have to shoot a guy four times and have a dialogue in between these shots and shoot him? Why can I, am I crazy, or are all the people that are doing this crazy? Another thing is, even though it wouldn't be at all popular, but it is the law, the police chief in Dallas premeditatedly on TV said that he wanted that problem solved in the next 15 minutes to his underlings, and that's premeditated murder. There's a system called the, you know, the judicial system, and that man was entitled, whether I don't like him, nobody likes him, but I, you know, I'm not against, I can understand why he did what he did.
Well, what are you saying? The police should not have defended themselves against this idiot?
He wasn't. They weren't defending themselves against this guy. He was in a garage. But I'm not saying, again, this is symptoms of what I'm saying.
Yeah, but I would have blown up the entire garage. You can't defend that guy, Robert.
Well, the rules of engagement have changed. You know, we used to have Andy Mayberry be our local cop, and
those days are gone.
And as soon as you pull out an AK or an automatic weapon and start hammering away, they're thinking, wow, you know, I need to go back and do something. So we had a series of incidents in the 90s that showed that the police were dramatically outgunned and were in a very serious situation. In 9/11, people realize that the first people to come to a major terrorist attack are going to be first responders, the police. And they're going to be dealing with horrific levels of violence if a terrorist attack happens. So they set up SWAT teams, which is essentially a militarized police unit. And then that thinking has then leaked into police training, where it's the officer's job to stay alive, because a dead police officer can't help other people. So they have to use force. And when an officer discharges his weapon, he's not discharging it to wound people like in the movies. You know, he has to keep firing at center mass until that person is dead. So this is the reality of police work. Now, are police properly trained? If you talk to police chiefs, they will bend your ear for an hour about their budgets, how much it costs to train cops, and, you know, both handguns, weapons, long guns, driving. So, I mean, we have a mixture of lack of training, and we have a very militarized police that's dealing with a very militarized problem.
We're going to come back and take final phone calls, Tom. Thanks for your call out there, too. But I think police were very justified to blow up that killer. We'll be back. And, of course, Robert Young Pelton with us. Final segment here as we take your phone calls, talking about the world in chaos. And welcome back with Robert Young Pelton and your phone calls as well. So, Robert, how long are you going to stay in Malta?
I'm here on and off. I go back and forth to San Diego. But this project has been very exciting, because we've gone from a small privately funded NGO last year to now we're supported by the Red Cross, which is the world's largest medical aid group.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really transitioned into a global NGO. So once that's done, I feel like, okay, there's not much more to do. So I'm just happy I was able to get it set up and work with Christopher Canterbone and Regina Canterbone to see their dream come true. And a lot of people, I think about 20,000 people, have been rescued from the ocean since we started.
When these people see you, these migrants, do they break down? Do they cry? Do they? What do they do?
Well, they're kind of freaked out. They don't swim, of course, and they've been packed on these boats by smugglers, and they usually leave in the dead of night. So they don't know what's ahead. And if you've ever been on an overcrowded boat,
it's the worst.
In the middle, yeah, it's not a good feeling. But they're just starting their journey, because a lot of these people have false hopes. You know, they think there's a new life waiting for them. And we spend a lot of time with people who have made it to Europe and they're trying to transition into that lifestyle. They face a lot of prejudice and a lot of obstructions that we wouldn't normally feel, because they're so far removed from some of the cultures. So they tend to live in areas where, let's say, there's other Syrians or other you know, Gambians and things like that. And it's tough, and a lot of people wish they never did it because it is that tough.
Sad, isn't it? Pathetically
well,
sad.
Well, it's the future. It's the future. I mean, we're becoming nomadic, and I have to say that the 50s, you know, post-World War II era, where everybody bought a house and had a car and one person worked, and that's gone. I mean, it's life is tough now, and if you have money, you make money, and if you don't have money, you wonder how you'll ever make money. So that split in society is something I can't fix, but it's glaringly obvious that something has to be done to save the middle class. And this is where migrants come in, because they come from nothing. They work their tails off. They get businesses, or they work two or three jobs, and they do enough to get their family into school, and they hope that the next generation will benefit from what they did. So this is what grows the world, but we shouldn't be afraid of them, and we shouldn't try to stop them from seeking a better life, or at least safety.
Our first-time caller, Stephen, truck driving in New Mexico. Stephen, thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, how you doing, George?
Great.
Say, I've got a question.
Okay.
Since we've come up with all this Taliban and Al-Qaeda and ISIS, I'm kind of getting pretty concerned. I've been doing a little research lately, trying to get more informed. And I watched a video recently that said that there are approximately 8 or 10 terrorist training camps in the USA right now, and they're training how to kill Americans. And if this is true, I'm wondering why our government hadn't done anything about it. I mean, if you look in the past, you got Waco, you got Ruby Ridge. They weren't doing as much as these guys are doing. And my question is, do you think that there really is these training camps in the United States? And how much of a threat are they going to be to my children and grandchildren? And if so, why haven't we done anything about it?
I've heard these stories too, Robert, that there are some of these militant training camps out there.
Well, it's not true. I mean, there's a number of training facilities that anybody can go to learn how to shoot a weapon or whatever. But I just want to throw a bucket of reality on all this stuff. So the U.S. did a survey of all men and women prosecuted for supporting ISIS. And this is a pretty reliable statistic. And what they found out is that most of them were men, which is, you know, normal. Most of them were young, but one third of them lived with their parents. Now, that is an exclamation point that should be projected every time somebody talks about these terrorists. The fellow that ran through Texas shooting cops lived at home. These are social misfits. These are not warriors or well-trained anything. That guy went to a private training facility to learn how to shoot his AK variant,
yeah.
And he was very adept at it, but he was very stupid at what he did, you know. So I just caution people by saying that there's no incredibly intelligent, efficient group of terrorist training in this country, and if there were, the FBI would be probably every second person, because historically in our country, most of the prosecutions and the arrests are directly result of FBI stings. And we're not talking about the brightest bulbs, you know, in the caravan, but we're looking at a group of people who are mentally susceptible to do something stupid if triggered. And those people are being fished in by undercover FBI people and all types of law enforcement and all types of technology as well.
A lot of whacked out people, Robert, aren't there? My God.
Well, I'll give you an example. I held a worm eating contest when I was in high school, and it was a joke, and we did it with the drama club. And the idea was that they weren't going to eat the worms. Well, during that festival, some kid who was mentally impaired ran from the back of the class and began stuffing all the worms down his mouth. And I use that story to, you know, when you do a Black Lives Matter protest or when there's some kind of symbol, whether it's like the World Trade Center, you will attract insane people to get attention.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about that. I mean, there are strange people everywhere. I don't know. You got guys running around naked, shooting at houses.
Yeah, but keep in mind, ISIS doesn't actually control the territory. ISIS is basically rebranding of existing groups. So when you see ISIS controlling Syria and you see ISIS controlling areas in Libya, these are three or four people. For example, the Southern Philippines just had a visit from two ISIS recruiters. They went to Abu Sayyaf, which is an old-time, you know, criminal slash terrorist group. They taught them how to chant. You can actually watch the videos. It's kind of laughable. They brought a bunch of flags, and then they cut some poor Canadian's head off to get attention. And this is what they do. They send two or three sort of trainers, recruiters to infiltrate these groups. They then join ISIS, and we think they're ISIS. But essentially, they're just paymasters, and they're providing sort of the PR, you know, front to these normally fairly incompetent groups.
I mean, listen to the story. East St. Louis, Illinois, which is right across from St. Louis, separated by the Mississippi River. Residents awoke to a naked gunman terrorizing their neighborhood. Police wounded the man, and he has since died in a hospital. Police say that the man was firing rounds at homes and motorists as they passed by. He was still on his front porch, naked, still shooting, when officers arrived. He fired one of the guns at the officers. They obviously returned fire. What is wrong with people? There's something wrong with people.
Yeah, but imagine if he would have been yelling ISIS and pledging Bayat.
Or Allah Akbar or something.
Yeah, exactly. It would have been a terrorist incident, even though the guy's a loony. And yes, it is a terrorizing incident. And it would have just added to these lists of basement dwellers. And we would then think that there's secret cells or sleeper cells or training camps and whatever, but it's not true. I mean, these people are loonies. They're attracted to a loony cause. They reverse the Maslow hierarchy of needs. You know, normal people want to be happy, healthy, and live for a long period of time. These people want to die. So that's cult thinking when you reverse normal, logical extension of your personality. So it's obviously going to attract a mentally deficient person.
Indeed. Let's go to Carlos in Carson, California, on the wild card line. Hi, Carlos. Go ahead.
Well, good evening, gentlemen. This question of radical Islam,
mm-hmm.
Western intelligence, Western banks, Western corporations, in alliance with the Saudi royal family, have forever financed radical Islam. Look at Wahhabi, who initiated the Wahhabi sect, was mentored by British intelligence a couple of hundred years ago. The Muslim Brotherhood, the Muslim World League, set up by the Saudi royal family. Okay, well, these are radical Islamic people, but the Saudi royal family was in alliance with the Western oil corporations. They had agreements to create a boogeyman. Terrorism, so that we could have an excuse for our military-industrial complex after the fact to have some nice wars, make a lot of money, and create chaos. Chaos is a business for the military-industrial complex. ISIS.
I can't say ISIS. You're wrong.
I saw a video of it. We are to blame. We finance terrorism.
Robert, he's right in many respects, isn't he? I think we lost Robert. Yep. Call him back, Tommy, in the minutes that we have left. He's in Malta, so you expect that. But, Carlos, let me go back to you. I think you're right.
Yes. I mean, look, our foreign aid, where does it go to? $3 billion plus all kinds of aircraft to Israel, to Egypt, to all these countries, and all you see is chaos. Come on. You withdraw the money, you withdraw the financing. All the chaos goes away. Nobody has money to do anything. We are to blame, and it emanates from here, from Great Britain. We are the culprits. We need the excuse to go to wars. And you know, there's plenty of information.
I just said yesterday that if all terrorism went away, there'd be groups that would create it in order to make money. Robert, we lost you right at the end, but did you hear some of his comments? I think he's right in many respects.
Yeah, and what I was trying to say is that we will always try to redefine an enemy in our own image. So we try to create a structure, we try to create backers, financiers, and then we try to apply our tools against them, which are, you know, tanks, contractors. You know, we use money against terrorist groups. And then, of course, they react by changing the way they do things, and they go at our weak spots. The mistake we made was that we decided that these groups, ISIS and Al-Qaeda and whatever, are built like the American military or government, and they're not. You know, they're little cells that are planted in different towns that appeal to the local complaints of the population, just like your local government or your local police. And we can fight, and we have fought these groups in the actual towns that they exist by either using elimination, in other words, we just shoot all the people that belong to ISIS, or we turn the people against ISIS and we give them the means to protect themselves. So there are tools to fight ISIS, but I wouldn't say that ISIS is anywhere near as powerful as the United States of America, but we tend to fight them in a very clumsy way.
Let's go to Tom in Baltimore, Maryland. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. Great show tonight.
Thank you, sir.
George, I'm retired from law enforcement, and I thank you for keeping me up on many of those long nights.
You're very welcome.
You all the time, except when I worked overseas, and I couldn't find you then, and I didn't have an MP3 player. I don't even know if they existed back then. But at any rate, I thank you. I want to quickly say to the Dallas families who lost their loved ones, your brothers and sisters across the nation and the world mourn with you tonight. I thank you for your sacrifice, and our prayers are with you. Now, I wanted to address the caller who wanted to talk about how the Dallas police chief decided to end the siege. On a very technical level, I have to say he's right. It's not our job to be judge, jury, and executioner. We're authorized to use force to stop the threat. However, in this case, I have to agree with him. There are a few exceptions. One is if you have a hostage where the hostage taker has a gun to that person's head, mm-hmm. and you utilize a sniper. We know what's going to happen. That's why we utilize a sniper with special rounds and special expertise. And in this case, it's very similar. You have to be very careful, though, and I trust the Dallas police chief with his expertise and knowledge. And I'm sure he consulted people about what would happen and what wouldn't happen. Back in 85, I don't know if either one of you recall, there was a black activist progressive group called MOVE in Philadelphia. The police dropped C4 into their headquarters when they couldn't get them out. Ended up burning up children, adults, and I think 6 city blocks. It was horrible. That's why we have to be very
judicious
with that.
Well, in this case, a robot in a garage, I think it was a smart move.
Oh, well, it was the perfect structure for such a tactic.
Yeah.
Off the net, he was cornered in. And you have to remember, like the chief said, he told them, I have bombs, and I'm going to kill more.
That's right.
Did he have a device that he could use a cell phone to detonate those? Now, that was an exigent circumstance that had to be dealt with immediately. So, again, I agree with him. I just wanted the caller to know that.
Okay, good. And thank you for serving.
Thank you, George. I thank you for your service as well. By the way, my great-grandfather, career Navy. I'm right with you.
All right, Tom. Thanks. Appreciate that. Robert, only a couple minutes left, and before we take any final calls, I wanted to give you at least the final word about where you think this planet is headed. It is in chaos right now.
Yeah, I mean, my experience and my advice is that most problems seem unsolvable, and they seem large, and they seem, you know, controlled by other people. But as you travel and live with these people, as you actually meet the people that you might consider your enemy or people who you don't necessarily agree with, you do come up with solutions. And I don't like seeing divisions. I don't like seeing Republicans looking at Democrats and calling each other names. I don't like the way the political system works during the election cycle because it divides people. And when you get down to it, knowing how your enemy thinks or how somebody that you don't necessarily agree with thinks gives you the tools to understand how to move at least a couple of steps forward. So, you know, my advice is don't demonize entire groups of people because something happens. So if a black man picks up a gun and shoots a white cop, that doesn't mean we need to put a wall between white and black people.
Of course not.
You know, and if a Muslim blows himself up in a mosque, that doesn't mean that every Muslim around the corner is thinking the same thing. But by building that wall, you then create more of a gap, which leads to a tougher and tougher reconciliation. So the solution to the world's problems are basically you trying to understand why those people are doing what they're doing. And in some cases, we have a lot of pressure, stress, and mental illness that forces people to do things Maybe it's out of their control, maybe it's in their control, but we shouldn't then label that insanity as being normal. So the Dallas shooter, it's very easy to label him as something and then bring in a larger group of people. I think we have a problem with mental health in this country.
Huge problem.
People are under pressure.
Yep.
And I don't think we want to step up and label somebody as crazy. So we're going to have more and more of these shooters, and they're going to be influenced by more and more hysterical causes.
Robert, call us back when you come back to San Diego, okay?
I will. I will. Thank you very much.
Robert Young Pelton, he's an explorer, but he's a great humanitarian as well. We've got a story that we're going to be talking with Charles R. Smith about in a moment. Apparently, there's been a secret FBI Air Force of 100 planes that fly over America. What's that all about? That's next.